Welcome to Shir and Svarno Parshas Chukas. The Svarno has an unusual arichos. He speaks at length at the beginning of the parsha about the mitzvah of Para Aduma, the red heifer, which of course we know is the subject of the beginning of Parshas Chukas. And we also know that Para Aduma is the quintessential chok, the quintessential mitzvah whose understanding defies our reason. We're at a loss to try to understand the details of the mitzvah of Para Aduma. The Svarno is going to present us a very unique way of perhaps understanding the nature of the mitzvah of Para Aduma. I say perhaps because at the end of the day, the Svarno himself admits that we can't really know with certainty as to what the nature of this mitzvah is, but he outlines a very, very unique way of trying to understand something about the mitzvah, which we'll share at the present time. Beginning of the Sedra, he writes, Kvar Amru Chazal, L'chach Kosav Bachuka. Chazal tell us that this is the reason that it's called Chukas HaTorah, the Chok, the decree of the Torah, Gzera Hime Lefonai, Ve'en L'cha Rishus L'hara Achareha. That the whole mitzvah of Para Aduma is a decree that emanates from the Ribbono Shel Olam, and we're not able, we don't have permission to try to figure it out, to try to think about it. I mean, I think clearly we'll see that the Sfarno understands Ein Lecha Rishus Lahara Acharea doesn't mean that we're not allowed to try to come up with reasons for the mitzvah of Para Aduma. Presumably what he means, because he's about to do that, he's about to do exactly that, presumably Ein Lecha Rishus Lahara Acharea, according to the Sfarno, means that you can't think that, well, if I don't understand what this is all about, perhaps this is a meaningless kind of mitzvah. You have to understand that there's meaning in the mitzvah. You could try to figure out the meaning of the mitzvah, but you have to admit at the end of the day that even if we can't figure out the meaning in the mitzvah, that we concede that it has meaning nonetheless. And famously, he quotes Shlomo Amar Aleha, that Shlomo HaMelech said concerning the mitzvah of Para Aduma, Amar Tiyech Kama, V'hi Rechoka Mimeni. In Kohelet, Shlomo says, I said that I would be wise and try to understand the nature of this mitzvah, but yet the true understanding of Para Aduma is far away from me. So in other words, Shlomo HaMelech, the wisest of men, concedes that he's unable to understand the nature of the mitzvah of Para Aduma. So with that as an introduction, he writes as follows. The thing that is most perplexing about the mitzvah of Para Aduma is Shehi Metama Es HaTaharim, that Para Aduma causes those who are already pure, who are involved in its procedure, to become Tame, to become impure, again with notable exceptions, which we'll talk about. U'mitaheres Es HaTmeim. And it takes people who are Tame, who are impure, and it's Metar them, it makes them pure. So in other words, how can you have something which produces contradictory results from the same procedure? Omnam ba'avinenu al kol ha'mitzvah ulai dova yugana v'yipat shemetz menhu v'zeki motzonu. Nonetheless, says the Svarno, we take a look into this mitzvah and we try to contemplate various parts of it. Perhaps we can come up with some kind of unified explanation as to what is going on with this mitzvah. And he goes on to outline six aspects of the mitzvah of Para Aduma, which he says are noteworthy, and when we contemplate these six aspects of the mitzvah of Para Aduma, perhaps we can come up with a unified theory as to what the mitzvah is all about. Rishona, so let's go through the six. So, point number one. Shekol ha'oskim ba me'esrei faso ve'elach tmeim. From the time that the Para Aduma is burned, everyone who's involved with that process becomes Tamei. That is to say, Hasorev, the one who burns the Paro, Vamashlich Eitz Erez Ve'ezo V'shnitz V'las B'srei Fasa, the one who throws the cedar wood, the hyssop, and the scarlet thread into the burning Para Aduma, V'ha Osef, the one who gathers up the ashes, and the one who touches the ashes, the one who carries the ashes, all of these people become Tomek. However, it is noteworthy, and this, by the way, people very often make a mistake with regard to this halacha. There are two people involved in the ashes of the Parah Aduma who remain tahor, who remain pure. That's the one who sprinkles the mixture of the ashes and the water on the person who is tameh, right? The mazah, the one who sprinkles. The hamikadesh, the one who sanctifies the water by adding the water and the ashes together. So those two individuals who actually play a pretty critical role in terms of the administration of the Parah Aduma, they remain tahar. Sometimes when you read stuff, especially in English, about the Parah Aduma, people sometimes mistake it and say that the one who sprinkles the water and the ashes on the person who's tameh himself becomes tameh. That's not actually true. Rashi again quotes that at the beginning of the Sedra. Even though it says in Pasuk, "Umaze mehanido yichabes begado," the one who sprinkles the water, has to sanctify, has to purify his clothing and his person. Chazal understand that that refers not to the maze, not to the one who's sprinkling, who actually remains taller, but to the one who carries the mechatos, the one who carries the ashes mixed together with the water. So again, we should note, says the Svarno, everybody becomes tameh with the exception of the one who sprinkles and the one who creates the mixture of the ashes and the mechatos together. That's point number one. Shenis. Second aspect about this mitzvah, which is noteworthy. Shemi'ikare hapara ushatiya aduma v'shleimus. We know that the heifer, the cow, has to be completely red. What is the significance of being completely red? So he writes, Ukvar be'er hanovi shahachet nimshal la'odom. The Navi tells us, Navi Yeshaya, that red symbolizes sin in a metaphoric sense. Where do we see that? Va'omro, the Pasuk says at the beginning of Yeshaya, Im yuchat o'echem kashonim hashel ol galbinu. If your sins are like scarlet, so the two ways to understand the Pasuk, either they will become as white as snow, statement, or some understand the Pasuk to be a question, shall they become as white as snow? However you interpret, however you punctuate that particular sentence, the beginning of Sefer Yeshaya, it's clear that snowy white is symbolic of purity, and red, scarlet, is symbolic of sin. Right? So in other words, the Parah Aduma needing to be entirely red has some symbolism related to sinfulness, says the Svarno, as we see from that pasuk in the beginning of Yeshaya. Lochein Amru Chazal, Chazal famously tell us with Mar Yuma, Shayukoshin Roshan Zuhuris Abismo Shalecho, that on Yom Kippur they would tie a scarlet cord on the entranceway into the Beit HaMikdash, and when the Zara Mishtaleach, when the goat that was pushed over the cliff, was pushed over the cliff as a sign of the atonement of the sins of Klal Yisrael, that Roshan Shal Zuhuris, that scarlet thread would turn white. Right, so scarlet is associated with sinfulness, white is associated with purity, with the forgiveness of sin, and we have to factor those metaphors in when we speak about the Parah Aduma needing to be read. Shlishis, third out of the six points. Roy Lisbonen Shibios Kol Imras Elokat Srufo. He believes Safik mi asheres hamaisim el hamitzua. This has nothing to do immediately with the Parah Aduma, but the Svarno says we have to consider the following. If, as we learn in Tehillim, kol imras elokat tzerufa, everything about what God utters is perfect, perfection is related to balance. And as he says, the Torah clearly wants to be miyasheres hamaisim el hamitzua. The Torah wants us to try to be balanced and to try to have our actions and the way we conduct ourselves in a balanced, middle-of-the-road kind of way. And here the Svarno, without quoting the Rambam, is clearly channeling and referencing the famous Rambam in the beginning of Hilchos Deos,
the rabbi, the beginning of Hilchos Neilos, writes that the way a person is supposed to conduct his life, the way a person is supposed to try to shape his personality, is that he shouldn't be too much of an extremist in either direction. On the one hand, you know, a person shouldn't be a kind of person who flies off the handle at his life's provocation. On the other hand, if you never get upset over anything, that's also not good. You know, there's certain things that you're supposed to get upset over. You see bad things happening in the world, so you're supposed to be upset. You're not supposed to just say, ah, whatever. Right? And similarly, a person's supposed to give tzedakah, but a person isn't supposed to just be so careless with his money and give it away so readily that he doesn't have anything left for himself. And everything in life is the Rambam. You have to try to strike the middle path. Sometimes the Rambam is quoted in the phrase Shvil Azov, the golden mean, is used in describing the Rambam's position. The Rambam himself never used the center of theology. But it describes, you know, this the idea of the Rambam that you should aim to be in the middle of the road, not when you're driving, but you should aim to be, you know, a balanced person in everything that you do, trying to shape your personality. So the Svarno, picking up on that, says that, you know, that clearly, without question, is what the Torah wants from us, to try to seek the middle path in everything we do. And he quotes a pasuk in Mishle, V'nekash durachayim yipol be'echos. If a person is trying to go on drachayim, on two different roads, but meaning he's trying to go to one or other of the roads that goes off in an extreme direction, yipol be'echos, he's certainly going to fall with one of them. Stick to the middle path, don't try to go off either to the left or to the right, the way the Svarno understands the pasuk in Mishle. So, Revius, fourth point to contemplate. So, also echoing the Rambam, the Svarno says, so what do we do when a person has veered too much in one direction? He's become an extremist in some way, which is, again, usually a harmful thing for the person. He's overly charitable, or he's overly stingy, or whatever happens to be. So the only way to correct that is to shift in the other direction, at least for a period of time, to try to counterbalance the extremism in one direction. If you're extremely charitable, and that's a problem, unfortunately we're going to have to insist that for a period of time you become extremely stingy, and, you know, swinging back in the other direction will eventually bring you into the middle. If you're a kind of guy who flies off the handle and is always angry at everything, at least for a period of time, you'll have to try to really not be reactive to anything. You'll have to try to go in the opposite direction in order to come out in a healthy balance, ultimately. That's the only way to correct it. The same is true, says the Svarno, when it comes to physical ailments. If a person, you know, is ill in a way that pushes his body in an extreme direction, you have to counterbalance it by going back in the other direction. Now, fundamentally speaking, a person shouldn't try to go to extremes. That's not appropriate. The Tashkas Inyan Mishatiya Darko Memutzas, and if a person is well balanced, is trying to go to one extreme or the other, is going to be counterproductive. But, you know, when a person is sick, you have to take extreme measures. So he gives an example. Let's say a person takes a laxative. Right? So a laxative, if a person is suffering from, you know, the need to take a laxative, the laxative is necessary. But if a person is healthy and he takes a laxative, so it's going to, you know, not going to be a good thing. Shetoya lachola, it's going to help for the person who's sick, the tazik laborin, but if the person is well, it's going to hurt him. So again, you know, in physical matters as well as spiritual matters, when a person is sick, they have to take something which is, you know, going to push them in the opposite direction, but that's not really an ideal. The ideal is to be balanced. It's only in response to the sickness or the person being off balance that they have to somehow correct that. So
those last two things, again, are really directly taken from the Rambam and Hilchos Deos. The Rambam also advises that although you have to try to be in the middle path, generally speaking, when a person is suffering from too much extremism in one way, he has to counterbalance it by going the opposite direction. And on the surface, that those two ideas have nothing to do with Parah Aduma, but here we come back to the Parah Aduma. Chamishas, the fifth idea out of the six. Royal is boning. One should contemplate the following. She'ein inyan le'efer ha'parah b'taras shum min v'mir ha'tumas, zulosi b'tahara b'tumas meis. The only type of tumma which requires the ashes of the parah aduma is when a person becomes tameh by virtue of coming into contact with a dead body. There are many, many types of tumas that a person can experience, but the tahara process that involves the ashes of the parah aduma is uniquely for someone who comes into contact with a dead body. What is the significance of that? So he writes, "Ukvar noda she'inyan ha'Torah v'mitzvos." We know that the nature of Torah and mitzvos is that chayim heim l'motzeiyem la'oskim bom. Torah and mitzvos represent life for those who are involved in them and those who devote themselves to them. Ka'amro, as the pasuk says, "Ki hu chayeichem." The Torah is your lives. V'hanota me'em l'havli anim sados. A person who deviates from Torah and finds himself caught up in the fleeting temporal things of this world, holech lamus, it's as if he's going to die. Oh, who may skamur, or he's considered to be as if he's already dead. Ka'amram, as Chazal say, Rishayim afilu b'chayem kruya meisim, that the wicked people are called dead even while they're alive. So in other words, just to speak out this part a little bit, the fact that the tahara process of parah aduma is uniquely related to tumas meis, to somebody who comes into contact with a dead body, suggests that this type of tumma is related specifically to sin. Why should that be? Ordinarily, a person becomes tameh is not necessarily a function of sin. It's not sinful to become tameh. A person's walking down the street, and he happens to come into contact with the sheriff, with a certain type of dead reptile that would make him tameh. Not sinful. It happens. You know, it's an occurrence. Okay, the person has to be retire himself. And the truth is, that's really true when a person comes into contact with a dead body as well. We don't say it's sinful to go to a funeral. We don't say it's sinful to bury a person. It's sinful to bury a person. But the fact that death is a metaphor for departing from Torah, because Torah is called life, and departing from Torah is called death, suggests that beyond the fact that this process is a process of being retired somebody from coming into contact with a dead body, it also has a symbolic significance of how to deal with a person who has deviated from the path of Torah. It gives us license, essentially, to look into the laws of Parah Aduma and to try to see something symbolic about a person who has sinned and how he can correct his sinfulness. And finally, Shishas, the sixth point, Roy Lizbone Mashamu Chazal. It's appropriate to contemplate that which Chazal say, She'etz Erez Yore Al Hagaiva, that the cedar tree, which is one of the components that's burned in the preparation of the Efer Apara, of the ashes of the Parah Aduma, the cedar tree hints at haughtiness. The cedar is a tall, mighty tree, and, you know, it speaks to the idea of haughtiness. The ha'ezo and the hissa, which is a lowly plant, yore al-hefka, it symbolizes the idea of lowliness, of humility, thank you, of the opposite of haughtiness. Now, the eight eras and the ezov, in a sense, are opposites of one another. So that point already is made by Chazal in the Medrash Tanhuma. But then the Sfarno adds the following. Uvios shmiya tolasim shneyem. There are three ingredients which are put together in the preparing of the ashes of the Parah Aduma.
the Ezel, the Eitz Eretz, the cedar, the Ezel, the Ezel, and the Shni Tolas, the scarlet thread. What's the significance of the scarlet thread? So that is Yore Sheshneim Chet. We said already that scarlet, that red, is the sign of sinfulness. The fact that the Shni Tolas, the fact that the scarlet is put together with both the cedar and the hyssop, is to tell us that an overabundance of either is sinful. An overabundance of haughtiness is certainly sinful, but an overabundance of humility is also sinful. Ka'amram, as Chazal say, b'shamto de ispe, u'b'shamto de lespe. Gemara Sota, Daf Yom Ad Aleph, one who possesses haughtiness deserves to be excommunicated, but someone who lacks any haughtiness also deserves to be excommunicated. And the idea over here, which the Sfarno is developing, is that, you know, there has to be a certain balance in a person's personality. On the one hand, to be a haughty person is clearly something that's terrible from a spiritual perspective. On the other hand, to totally lack any haughtiness, which I think what this one was saying is, to lack any sense of self-worth and self-esteem, is also not only problematic, but is even sinful. Because the person who doesn't have that healthy sense of self-esteem and self-worth himself will end up in situations that are going to be problematic. So he gives an example. Bifrat, this is especially true. A person is in a leadership position, and, you know, he lets people treat him like a shmata. So that's not going to be productive. It's not going to be productive for him. And again, he's going to argue that that's actually something which is sinful, because you have a role to play, and to the extent to which you're not going to have that sense of shtolf, that sense of strength in playing that role, you're abdicating the role that was given to you. And he quotes two examples. Kfar Omru Chazal, Shenenash Shaul, Ashlo Hikbir Al Kavodo. A prime example of this says the Sfarno Shaul HaMelech. Shaul HaMelech was a tzaddik. But Chazal called Shaul HaMelech to task because his kavod was attacked in certain ways, and he didn't care. So Ka'amro, the pasuk describes how on the day that Shaul HaMelech was anointed, certain people who didn't recognize the kingship of the sovereignty of Shaul, they objected to his taking the position. They didn't bring him the customary gifts which one would bring a king on his coronation day. And Shaul was silent. He didn't call the people out, you know, for failing to recognize him on his coronation day. So, from a certain perspective, you say, wow, you know, what a humble, self-effacing person. What a wonderful Baal Midos. You know, how wonderful it was that Shaul HaMelech didn't object to these people not showing him the kavod. But there's a flip side to that. Chazal say that he was wrong for not being makbid on his kavod, because it's not just about him, the individual. It's ultimately about the office which he occupies, and his failure to call out the people who didn't respect the office meant that the office itself was degraded as a result, and that impaired Shaul HaMelech's ability to really be a leader. And we see that most prominently in the famous Haftarah, which is read from Parashat Zachar, which describes how Shaul HaMelech responded to the people who said, you know, even though we're going to go out there and destroy Amalek, nonetheless, let's save the sheep. You know, why do we have to destroy all the sheep? We'll take the sheep, we'll make karbonis out of the sheep. So, b'chein tachas alav Hanavi. So Shmuel Hanavi goes to Shaul HaMelech after the war with Amalek, and he castigates him for exactly that. Haloim katon ato beinecho, rosh shivtei Yisrael ato. You know, why did you hold on to the sheep? Why didn't you destroy the sheep? So Shaul HaMelech said, well, the people told me that I should destroy the sheep. So Shmuel right away says to him, you may be nothing in your own eyes. You may, you know, be humble and self-effacing, and that's very beautiful and very nice. But Rosh Shivtei Yisrael Ato, you're the head of all of the tribes of Israel. you can't just say, well, if the people want it, so that's, I'll disregard HaKadosh Baruch Hu's commandment. Part of why you're king is that you have to stand up to the people when the people are demanding something which is inappropriate, which is wrong. So, it's the very self-effacing, humble personality of Shaul HaMelech, which, again, to an extent is a beautiful thing, but to an extent can also be sinful if allowed to go to that level. So the Sfarno says that's part of the symbolism of the Para Adonai. The fact that the Eitz Eretz and the Esav representing haughtiness and humility are combined with the Shnit Olas, with that Sfarnos, is to show that an excess of either is going to be problematic and sinful. And again, it goes back to the idea which the Sfarno stressed, which we spoke about a few moments ago. The Sfarno very much buys into the Rambam's approach that a person has to try in everything in life to be in the middle, and in terms of his personality traits, and not to veer to one extreme or the other. Now, it's interesting to note, with regard to this last point in particular, it would seem as if the Sfarno was actually deviating from the Rambam. Because the Rambam says, both in Hilchos Deos as well as in Pirush HaMishnayos and Masechta Avos, that the one exception to the idea that you're not supposed to be an extremist is when it comes to humility. And the Rambam in Pirush HaMishnayos and Masechta Avos says that that's pshat in the Mishnah of Pirkei Avos, Ma'od Ma'od Heve Shmal Ruach. You should be Shmal Ruach, you should be a person who's lowly of spirit. Ma'od, ma'od, very much so, very much so. What's ma'od, ma'od? I mean, Chazal didn't waste a word. So what Chazal saying? You should be very, very humble, extremely lowly of spirit. So the Rambam there in Pirush HaMishnayos writes in very, very strong terms that humility is the exception to this general idea that a person has to be balanced, a person has to be humble to the utmost extent, where the person doesn't care about their covet, about their honor, whatsoever. And again, if you want to look at that Pirush HaMishnayos in Masechta Avos, he gives a very, very memorable example of how a person should just absorb, any kind of insults and humiliation, and just deal with it. It doesn't matter, you're nothing, you should realize that you're nothing. Very, very extreme in the way he presents it. Right, so the Shaila is, so what would the Rambam do with statements like the Gemara in Sota, the Shamta de Isbe, the Shamta de Lesbe, which seem to imply that a person has to have a certain amount of self-esteem, a certain amount of haughtiness, and like all the Gemaras about Shaul HaMelech. So it could be that the Rambam would say, there's a special din when it comes to a Melech Yisrael or somebody else who's in a position of prominence. They and only they have to have this degree of toughness, of lack of humility. But if you're not in that kind of position, you have to be humble to the utmost extent. It's possible that the Rambam would say that. I'm not sure. But it's clear that the Sfarno is extending this idea not just to a Melech Yisrael, but really to anyone. In other words, he says, the Melech Yisrael, the person who's in a position of prominence, especially has to be careful not to be a doormat, not to be a shmata, but really anyone, has to try to achieve that balance, between humility on the one hand and haughtiness on the other. So these are the six points which the Sfarno says are worth contemplating when it comes to the mitzvah Parah Adumah. As Hashem will pick up tomorrow, we'll see how he takes these 6 points and tries to make a unified theory out of them in terms of understanding, at least on some level, what the mitzvah of Parah Adumah is all about. Okay,